meeting. Before I forget, I'm going to put our PayPal link in the chat pod. And for those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you. And you can either wave at the screen or raise your hand virtually if you like. I'm seeing a Cecil.
I'm Cecil and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome, brother.
Thank you.
Glad you're here, man. And I'm not seeing anybody else. All right. Awesome. And anyone can use the chat function to send their number, their phone numbers out. Hit up Cecil if you want. And moving on to the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing Step 4, Part 1, Resentments. I'd like to ask you to join me in welcoming our panel. This evening, we have Ebony and Al. Woohoo! Thank y'all for being here. Super excited. So how this is going to work is I will read the first paragraph, which tonight is on page 63, and then each member of the panel will share for a few minutes. And we're going to start with Miss Ebony tonight. And I am going to do my best to share the reading. All right, so Step 4 is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? And Ebony,
Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony. I have a home group. My home group is Westside Young and Sober. We meet Tuesday nights at 7:30. We're currently on Zoom. We are a step and tradition study. I have a service position in that home group. I'm the GSR. I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring other people in Alcoholics Anonymous by taking them through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous using the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Put all of that in there because I'm the girl who showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous never interested in being of service. So it's cool that today I get the opportunity to be of service. I feel super underdressed now. I see Al in his tie and I'm like, you know, I get a text asking if I could step in. And I was taught that if I can, I say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. AA gave me a life of freedom. And today there's nothing that AA can ask of me that I feel is like, that's just too much. That's just too inconvenient for me these days. I have not found it necessary to take a drink since Friday the 13th, November 2015. I don't know if I already said that. I just want to make sure I'm crossing, you know, all of the T's, dotting all the I's or all of that stuff. So resentments and inventory and step forward, like, oh my goodness. I walked into AA and the first thing I did was see that big poster. And step four was something that I automatically was like, don't need it. Like, I just came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm a girl who accidentally gets drunk. I'm a girl who just can't figure out why I can't stop drinking. And the last thing I ever thought I needed was this house cleaning, this personal inventory. So I love that, you know, the steps are in order for a reason. I did not know that. I didn't know that I thought I had the right to pick and choose which steps I was going to do to cure my alcoholism. But thank God fellowship was there to save me from myself. You know, and step four comes after I've made a decision. I've made a decision that maybe this hope that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, this program of action, these clear-cut directions might just work for me. And I move on. And I get to this fourth step and I love how it starts. Like, I vigorously launch into action. I don't sit back and take my time and cross my arms and just sit here and think like, okay, well, I've done one, two, and three. This is enough. Like, I've found some peace. I've turned my will and my life over to God. It tells me like, this is where the action starts. I need to get to work, you know? And for someone like me, I don't do anything vigorously. Unless it's drink, vigorously complain, vigorously take naps, if you can do that. But I don't vigorously jump into action, trying to find out the causes and conditions of my alcoholism. You know, and so I just love how it starts. I've never been one to personally house clean, like literally and in my soul. If you've ever seen my car or my house, you'll know that it's a program of progress, and hopefully one day I can start doing that better. But I like how it tells me in the beginning paragraph, these paragraphs are always super powerful for me, that the third step means absolutely nothing unless I get right into work. You know, the third step is great, but the third step without doing this personal house cleaning is just a waste of my time. Just like every other step, if I just do one part of the step and I don't follow it up with the next set of directions and the next set of actions, I'm destined to go back to where I came from, which is wanting to die, not being understood, not knowing what's wrong with me. And so, you know, this is a very beginning for me. And my heart is pumping, guys. Sorry, I had pre-workout today. And so I love how it tells me right here, being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. I have to look at the common manifestations. And I was not convinced that self manifested in several. I did the third step. I wasn't selfish. I wasn't self-centered. I was convinced that I needed a relationship with something out there because I was always failing no matter what, but I wasn't convinced I was selfish. And then I followed these directions that followed. I did these columns and clear-cut directions once again. Like, this is why I love the big book. I did not have to figure anything out. I had someone sit down and guide me, and it tells me. The first thing I do is I list the people and institutions. The second thing I do is I ask myself, why am I angry? Did that my entire life. I can tell you who I'm angry at. I can tell you what happened to me in second grade and how Chris Kane beat me in Mad Minute. I can do all of that stuff. And then it tells me the next thing I do is I talk about how it affects me. Like, how did this affect me? I never thought about how these resentments, how these things that blocked me off from the sunlight of the spirit affected me, let alone categorize them, my pocketbook, my ambitions, my sex relations and fear, you know? And so I love that when I follow these directions, somehow this spiritual malady, and that's a promise to me, if I straighten out spiritually, everything else will fall into place. And that's what these directions give me. When I put pen to paper and I start writing out these columns and I start seeing what really is rotting my soul, these moldy pieces of bread, that's what I think of when I think about the spiritual malady. My soul is full of these moldy chunks. And the fourth step helps me identify some of this stuff. So that's all I got right now. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Ebony and Al. Al, you are muted. You should be able to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Al, alcoholic. Sobriety date, May 5th, 1987. That's because Alcoholics Anonymous works. So I'm one of those people that's amazed by the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It updates itself all the time. And, the first two steps are mental conclusions, is what Wilson told us. After all this great information from the doctor's opinion into the fourth chapter, he declares in the 12 and 12, these are mental conclusions. They're not working steps. So the book treats them as three pertinent ideas, which are the gateway to the third step decision. And the third step decision out of the big book is the conditions of surrender. And it outlines what the conditions are. And one of the first conditions is that any life based on self-will can hardly be success, because we're always in collision with either something or somebody, even though our motives are good. It talks about in the conditions of surrender that self is utterly hopeless in solving self's problems without God's help. That we suffer from 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, and self-seeking. We are people that are self-will run riot, though we usually don't think so because we're so busy blaming God and other people for our problems. Having said this beautiful part of a third step, the conditions of surrender, it shows what my place is and what God's place is in this decision. I'm going to make a decision to turn my life, my will over to the care of God, not the control of God. And then it says something that's absolutely remarkable. Though this was a vital and crucial step, it has little, you think it would have lasting effect. It has little effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face, and when I see that, that's the face fear, and to be rid of the things in ourselves that are blocking us. Our liquor's but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. So the third step decision is a decision to get unblocked from self, and I can't do it without steps 4 through 9 and to continue it in 10, 11, and 12. Now in the 12 and 12, it says, there's no people more victimized by resentments than us alcoholics because we're sensitive. And like most people, and I don't think we have a monopoly on it, alcoholics are prone to justifiable resentment or justifiable anger. I haven't had any that isn't justifiable. It is always your fault. And the problem with resentment is a resentment is always right until you talk to your sponsor about it, go to a meeting and start to write it down. And then you start to see that maybe, just maybe, this resentment's not right. But a resentment's always right when it starts. And a resentment for me always turns into, and has many faces, it always turns into self-pity. Always. Life's hard. This is tough. They're not treating me right. They don't understand me. So it took me years to see is that we write a personal inventory, not an intellectual one. I think my first three or four were probably intellectual. It doesn't matter. It works. I'm not picking on. I'm just telling you. Then I got to I did the charts, the graphs from Joe and Charlie and all the stuff that was floating around. And it was always good because I learned something. I would not put it down, devalue it. But for me, a personal inventory was pulling out the yellow sheet of paper and to write it out without somebody already having a graph on those columns so I could start to look at them and I could build them. What fascinates me is, again, it's going to repeat the same thing in the third step. Itself is what's defeated us. Now we're going to look at the common manifestation. The first one is resentment, because I'm prone to resentment. I'm an oversensitive alcoholic. It doesn't take much sometimes. And the third step gives me a clue of the third column. I made a decision based on self to put me in this position. I made a decision based on sex. I made a decision based on self-esteem. I made a decision based on social. How I look, how I feel, wanting you to like me. I made a decision based on money. Security. False security, but I like it. I made a decision based on personal relationships. What can I get out of them? And I come up short. I love the third column. What does it affect in me? Well, it affects, look what it does. That's self. The third column is self. It's what creates society. It's what affects me, what bothers me. You threaten me. Hurt, threaten, or interfere with myself, I'm going to retaliate with resentment. Took me a long time to put that together. I didn't get that overnight. I think my 5 minutes is probably up. I will go on after that.
Thank you guys so much for sharing, and you take as much time as you like. God's okay. In charge. All right, our next reading is on page 65. Let's see here. Page 65, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought it and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And jumping ahead to page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die.
All right. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony. I don't know if I should keep doing that, but I will. So I like how right here it tells me nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And we went back to our lives. You know, I had this great idea when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that when it came to talking to my sponsor, that I would only talk to her about the things that I felt were dealt with my alcoholism. You know, I didn't need to talk about my family matters. I didn't need to talk about, you know, work relationships. I didn't need to talk about certain things. And right here, it tells me I go back to my life. My first sponsor was very straightforward. Well, actually, both of my first and my current sponsor, they cared more about my sobriety than they did about my feelings. And they do it with love and compassion every time. But I remember sitting down and my sponsor was like, do what you can remember. You know, don't play this head game, because I like to overthink things. Any resentment that I could think of as I do it, to be as thorough and honest at that moment as I could, you know, and keep in mind that I'm not going to do it perfectly. I'm not going to remember everything. And that was very encouraging for a perfectionist like me. Because I needed to get to work. I am not the type of alcoholic who could prolong this type of experience. And so I finally do this work and it becomes apparent that the world and its people often were quite wrong. Like, I could have told you that when I first walked in the door. My dad is a jerk. My mom should have married someone else. My sister, we won't say those kinds of words in Alcoholics Anonymous right now, but that's my sister, you know, and that's who I am. I know the world and the people wrong us. And I used to feel personally attacked. Now I get lit up. You know, this stuff like sets me on fire, but I would feel personally attacked because that definitely was as far as I ever went. You know, just talking about how people don't treat me right, how people aren't following the script that I've written, how people just, if you only would do what I said, I'd be at peace, you guys. And so would you, maybe, but like, I'm really the star. So if you don't get peace, that's your fault anyways. and so I can't read this paragraph without thinking of my mom. When I was little, so many things don't make sense until I become a drunk inside of Alcoholics Anonymous who found a solution. And I say that because when I was little, my mom would always tell me, Ebony, pick your battles. Pick your battles. And that makes so much sense. Ebony, just let go. Like, it's not that serious. Calm down. But she didn't understand for me, like, I was a grudge and a scorekeeper from as early as I can remember, you know, and I would be so frustrated. And reading this right here and the end of this paragraph, as in war, the victor only seemed to have won. Because I would win that argument. I would win that debate. I would prove to you who I was. And then I'd walk away and spend the next 3 hours or 3 years or who knows, replaying this fight and replaying this argument, what I should have said instead, or what I should have worn instead, or what I should have had at the restaurant instead, how I should have responded, or spending the same amount of time pre-planning the next time I see you what I'm going to do. And I thought that was a useful, like, this is a purposeful, useful amount of time for these things. And right here, it tells me I'm squandering and I'm wasting the hours. I am wasting this time, you know, and I can see how that would cut me off. I'm not thinking about God or being useful to other people. I'm not thinking about maintaining and growth of a spiritual condition. I'm thinking about Ebony Kiana Pearson. That is all. I'm okay with saying my full name after I said it. You know, that's, I'm all I think about. And I don't know I'm in that darkness until I'm finally in the light. I didn't know how sick I really was. And I probably still have no idea, honestly. I just know that once I start getting a taste of the sunlight of the spirit, it's amazing how free I get. This sense of freedom, not that relief that the drink used to get me, but a sense of freedom that I get from doing this and starting to see a little bit more truth about myself. You know, but I love how it tells me why I have to do this. Because the more I harbor these resentments in sobriety without taking a drink, because I can get resentful without taking a drink. I've been resentful without taking a drink. The insanity returns, and then I will take a drink. The insanity comes back first. You know, that peculiar mental twist, my relapse is mental before I even physically put alcohol in my system. And for me, to drink is to die. I thought that was just like, well, you guys are so dramatic, you group of drunks, ha ha ha. Until I've been around long enough, and I haven't been around that long, to see in other people to drink is to die. You know, and I, whether it's physically or spiritually, like, I just don't want to live that life anymore. And so thank God I get a little bit of that sunlight, sometimes a lot of bit of it, but I love to shimmy in the sunlight. Anybody who knows me knows that's my favorite part. So thanks for letting me share.
So to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. I always think, Bill, how did you know me? You haven't ever even met me. You're not even alive. You're, how'd you? Because he's an alcoholic. And that's the special gift of AA, is one alcoholic talking to another. You know, that's as far as I ever got, because my default position, one of them, is blaming other people. And when a resentment's always right, the outcome's always blame. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Justifiable anger. But we're not supposed to have it. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves, self-pity. And I really think that one of the reasons or excuses that people go back out and drink after time, some time of sobriety, I think self-pity is one of the culprits that activates the obsession to drink again. I'm feeling sorry for myself, and I felt sorry for myself many times, and I didn't even know I was feeling sorry for myself because I was used to feeling that way. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Get out of the contest. And a contest is always built on I'm right and you're wrong. And when I'm right and you're wrong, there's no way out of it till I give in and I start to take a look at myself and I start to admit that I'm wrong. I can't do that without your help, God's help, and a sponsor's help. I believe I'm inadequate to the task. And I'll tell you, some of these resentments have long shelf lives, okay? You do the inventory, share it in fifth, run it through six and seven, do a ninth, pop back up in 10, 11, try to douse it in the 12th step by helping others and going to meetings, and it works. It works, but it's still there. It goes away for a while, then it comes back. It goes away, it might be go away for a couple years, and then it comes back. And that was one of the resentments I had towards my mother's alcoholism growing up and being drunk and not being all the things that I thought that she should do as a mother should do. And hearing other people's mothers and knowing I didn't have that at home. My mother was drunk. She wasn't home half the time. And I did a lot of blaming on my mother. Had a lot of justifiable anger. It wasn't doing me any good, but I had it justified. I had good reason. I could have told you most people would agree with me. But I'm glad that our literature says that I can't handle justifiable anger, that I've got to be willing to forgive no matter what the harm's done. I think that's a pretty powerful statement. No matter what the harm's done, I've got to find a way to forgive. Can't do that without you sponsoring God. Can't do it. I don't get me without you. So this thing lingered with my mother off and on throughout my sobriety. Like I said, sometimes I didn't think about it for years, and then something would happen, something would go wrong in the marriage, something go wrong in my head, and there it was again. Long shelf life. And then didn't think about it for a while, and then, oh yeah, I'm this way because, you know, I still had some blame, you know, some of my quirks of my personality or my overreactions. That's how my mother, of course, if you, there it was. This trailed me for a long time. We're talking right up to 2 weeks ago. And I'm not saying every day, every moment, Not at all. But I'm telling you, it was there. Now, here's what happened. I invited a friend of mine from Washington, D.C. to speak at our meeting last week. He's my Zoom buddy. We go all around the world with each other. And she said that the first thing that she remembered when she was 4 years old was her uncle was molesting her. Her mother walked away out of her house, drank, did drugs, and ended up dying. She was molested repeatedly. Her father showed little attention but was there. And one day, I think she said her brother-in-law or uncle shot him in his face with a shotgun in front of her. She still has BB pellets in her face. She went on to talk about the tragedies of her childhood, being repeatedly molested growing up, then living in a ghetto and doing what people in the ghetto did, and the life that she lived on the streets. After she finished, I was totally free of that resentment. That gift came in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wrote her the next day, and I was with a couple other people at her that also grew up in alcoholic homes. And we wrote her and said, thank you so much for your lead last night. You have relieved me of the bondage of self in that area. I no longer have any resentment towards my mother. It's taken off the shelf. In fact, I'm starting to look at the alcoholic home that I lived in would be like going to a birthday party without anybody showing up and no presents. Thank you so much for giving me that freedom. And this is what God does. God speaks through other people. He speaks through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the sponsorship, and the fellowship. And through this actions, I start to get a relief for me. I have squandered in my sobriety because of my sensitivity and need to be right. I have squandered many hours. I'm a squanderer. And I identify with Bill Wilson. He said he was a champion of dry drunks. And I have been a champion from time to time of dry drunks and Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm still standing, and I have had effective mental defense. I have not come close to a drink since I got sober. Now, some other things have gone in my head, but the drink has been relieved from me one day at a time. That's how potent Alcoholics Anonymous is. I'm finished with that one.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Super powerful stuff. And we are staying on page 66 for this next three. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Ebony?
So, this fancied or real resentments had the power to kill. I'm not a big fan of fellowship statements in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know nobody asked me my opinion, right? Leave it to me to show up and give it anyways. but so there, I remember sitting in a meeting and hearing this whole victims don't recover thing. And my mind instantly grabbing onto this saying and walking to my sponsor the next day, and trying to use this as an excuse of why I probably would not get sober. You know, and I think that is so important, having a sponsor that I was comfortable asking questions, you know, because I hear a lot of things in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that are not in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I would go and I would hear stuff and I would ask my sponsor, I heard this at a meeting, what does this mean? I heard that at a meeting, what does it mean? And I had this old timer who told me, and he would tell me, a lot of people just say things, Ebony, and they can't explain it. So if you want to ask them, ask them. And a lot of times they'll say, I don't know, my sponsor says it, so I say it. And I remember walking up to someone at a meeting and asking them what that meant. Because I was curious, like I was in pain and I was desperate and I wanted to know, because I thought there was no hope for me. You know, victims don't recover. Well, then if that's the case, I need to just walk out the door. And I went and asked and they were just like, well, you know, victims don't recover. Like, okay, so what does that mean? Victims don't recover. Okay, so what does that mean? You know, it was that loop. And I was so irritated, resentment, right? So irritated, I went and I asked my sponsor and we sat down and we talked about it. You know, and the reason I bring that up is because right here, there are some things that are justifiably wrong. There are some harms, there are some resentments that if I went to a non-alcoholic, if I went to my mom or my best friend or my pastor, they would say like, yeah, you should be mad. You should be angry. Like, I'd be angry too. Keep that. Like, yes, you know, but I show up to Alcoholics Anonymous and they tell me fancied are real. The fancy stuff, the stuff I've made up in my head about how people don't treat me right and I'm underappreciated, that I can easily see. That part comes, but it was the real things that someone would, a non-alcoholic would say, you know, that dubious luxury of other men. A non-alcoholic would say, yeah, be wrong, be mad. They were wrong. I can't just walk away from something like that and be like, okay. Well, since my pastor told me it's okay, it's okay. I show up to Alcoholics Anonymous and I realize like I still have a part. You know, I still have something in here. And I don't usually say what is my part, but like when it comes to specific things like that, what my sponsor told me is that the inventory and what I know for fact today, what my experience is that those real things that have happened in my life that I've held resentments over, this inventory process has allowed me to go from victim to survivor. It has allowed me to go from victim to victor. It has allowed me to practice a little bit of forgiveness. I would say a little bit because a crack of forgiveness for someone like me in situations like this are huge triumphs, you know? And so I love how it's followed up with the sick man's prayer. When someone offends, when something's wrong, for years, I haven't been sober that long, but like for the first 3 years, I'd be like, God, this is a sick man. I'm better than this person. Please don't let me curse him out and just be through with you peasants. You know, that was my attitude, you know, but like when I really read this and where my relationship is right now, it's, you know, God, this is someone sick just like me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what they've been through. It's not someone who's sicker than me. It's not someone who's sick in a worse way that's just disgust. It's like, this man is sick like me, God, and I don't know what's wrong. Like, please show me how to not be angry. Please show me how to show up. How can I show love and kindness and compassion? You know, that's hard work for me. That is a hard, especially when someone offends or when I have something that's justifiable, something that makes me feel superior. My first go-to isn't how can I be helpful to him and to avoid retaliation and argument. Everybody needs to know they're wrong and I'm right. You know, especially if I don't like you, especially if I think you're sicker than me. So these clear-cut directions that remind me, Ebony, keep your mouth closed. Like, how can I be helpful? Sometimes the only helpful thing I can do, the most kind and loving and compassionate thing I can do is shut up, be still, walk away. Talk to God about it, talk to my sponsor about it, but leave that situation alone. And I, the last thing that I want to say real quick is that how it reminds me, I can't be helpful to all people, but I can take the view that God is the father and I am the child. And if God is my father and I'm the child, maybe this person over here is God's child as well. And so maybe I should treat this person with some love. Maybe I should treat them with some patience. Maybe I should treat them. I grew up in a house, we weren't allowed to say stupid. I couldn't call my brother or sister out of their names. I couldn't say you're a dork, Ray. Like my mom would get so upset. I named him and you will call him by his name. Like if that's my mom in the house, like I feel like that's what God wants me to do to others too. Call them by their name, treat them with kindness, treat them with love. And remember, they're sick just like me, which is a big thing for me to say. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Al Alcoholic, this is a good meeting. This is good stuff, whatever we're in the book, and we all have different ways. The beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, we all have different ways of looking at things. And we prepare to look at it from an entirely different angle. But first of all, it talks about the grouch and the brainstorm. And when you withhold resentment and it's inside of you, like I said, I've been a champion of it from time to time, it'll make you moody and it'll make you grouchy. And I'm not saying that's the only thing is, but I can guarantee that holding in a resentment for me has made me moody and grouchy. And the brainstorm, you know, stormed with rage. My mind's full of it. I love it. A brainstorm of anger. That intensity that I have as an alcoholic and those emotions, I'm very well aware of. There is an intensity. For most alcoholics I know, I certainly wouldn't say all. But what Ebony was talking about was the victim statement. They don't recover. There's truth in everything we talk about in the fellowship, but I think at the same time, there's sometimes we don't mean it, but we make all or nothing statements with a period next to it. And our book says that some of us suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but we can recover if we have the capacity to be honest. And the other thing it says is no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point. Now, here's the point. Are you willing to grow along spiritual lines? And we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Most of us, and again, I'm not going to say all, fall short of the mark. We know better, but we don't do better. And anytime an alcoholic gets a resentment, they instantly go into victimization. It's their fault. Poor me, poor me. So I had to see that this is a truth here, that the world and its people really did dominate me. I allowed them to clobber me. And at 24 years of sobriety, I stayed in resentment for 6 years in a business partnership. And my wife got drunk at 20 years. And I had a young child to take care of, and I was very bitter for a long, long time. I'm not telling you that it was every day, every week, but I'm telling you in a 6-year period, it was a lot of squandering hours. I couldn't shake it. It was like it got on me with Gorilla Glue, and it just kept coming. You know, then I'd get shingles, and I would get a kidney stone, and then because of the stress and the anger and go back to the work. And I found out when you work with people, when you can get away with from them, and they live 2 miles down the road, it's a lot easier to get in a position of forgiveness and let this stuff go through inventory, sponsorship, and everything we throw at it. But when you're face-to-face and you live in the same house or in the same business and have to face it every day, it can get a lot more challenging. And from those resentments, I got incredibly burned out, didn't know it at the time, and fell into the black hole for 14 months. Don't ever care to go back there. It was brutal. And in the midst of that black hole, I was pretty convinced that one day I was going to die from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But I just went to another old meeting. And sometimes the very best we can do is get to a meeting with our shoes tied before the steps catch back up with us. The fellowship here is very, very potent. It saved my bacon many times. It's allowed me to get back into the directions where I was too decapitated from self that I could do nothing. See, I can only do the possible, but God does the impossible. And that's the statement of the conditions of surrender. And that's what happened to me. We suffer together back to the light. We don't do it alone. There's nothing wasted in God's economy. Anything said in the fellowship is not wasted. It can help another alcoholic. I have to remember that. Even though it's not meant for me, it might be meant for somebody else. Well, we had to master these resentments. And here's what happens here. This stops being a psychological process. If you look at the inventory in itself, it looks like a psychological process to a certain extent. Now it's going to turn to a spiritual process because we're going to call on God to relieve us of self here. We can't get this by ourselves. We're going to ask God, as pitiful as we are sometimes, to help us show us the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. I can't do that. I can't manufacture it. I have to ask God. I have to be with you. I have to be surrounded with active people. I got to be in a sponsorship line of active, fanatical alcoholics in AA because it has to rub off on me. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? Save me. God save me from being angry. Your will, not mine, be done. Now, that's a challenge when you're bitterly angry at someone. To look at them as a sick person. And one of the game changers here is they, like ourselves, were sick too. So now it's on an even playing field. Later on, Wilson would declare in the 12 and 12, we're not the only ones bedeviled by sick emotions. The world is. But that was a game changer for me to say, okay, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Okay. This sometimes doesn't happen in an instant when I ask God to save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? Because I really don't want to be helpful at those points. I will grow towards that if I stay in the process. It's not a lightning bolt, though maybe sometimes it is. Your will, not mine, be done. That's my favorite prayer because it's simple and I can remember it. And here we go. We avoid retaliation and argument. Shut up, Al. Don't run your mouth. It will get you in trouble. We wouldn't treat sick people that way because they, like ourselves, were sick too. Again, that can be very challenging. Sometimes the mouth comes out, especially in very close personal relationships. My sponsor always said that the closer you get to somebody, the closer you get to their defects too. And I have found that that's true on occasion, especially if you live with someone, you're married, or you're in business partnerships. Why we wouldn't treat sick people. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. I love that one. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us to take a kindly and tolerant view towards each another one. Again, we're asking God to come into this equation. I can only do the possible. God does the impossible. So I'll throw out this idea. Years ago, and I think we've changed in AA, it may still be in again, it may work for someone, but I fire you as a sponsor because you're not doing what I asked you to do. It's almost on a childish level. When I take that tack when I'm working with someone, I destroy a later chance to be helpful. So what if they don't respond? It says, don't be discouraged. It's okay. They don't do what you ask them to do or do what you're doing. So what? Who cares? That's their sobriety, not yours. We're here only to be helpful to our fellow alcoholics, not to sit in criticism or judgment of what they do and don't do. We offer a plan, program of action out of the book, sponsorship, fellowship, all the stuff we do. So when I'm working with someone, I'm going to avoid retaliation argument. I'm not going to treat a sick person that way because I destroy a later chance of being helpful. I've been working with a guy that keeps going in the woods and drinking himself to death in a cabin down the road. I've never once called him out. I've never once criticized him. I've never once tried to straighten him out, tell him, hey, did you read the book? He's read the book. He's been in and out of AA for 10 years. He's got enough intellectual knowledge that he could stay sober if he applied it. I just reached out to him. I said, when you finish drinking, my door's back open. Well, after 3 years of drinking, he walked back in my house in April. He said, I'm finished. Can I take the steps with you? We went through the steps in about 2 days, like the old timers. I told him, you got the rest of your life to get better at this process. Let's just get into the ninth step and do this stuff. It's not perfect. And he's been sober now since April. If I'd slammed the door and said, you're not doing what I asked you to do. You're staying drunk. You relapse. Don't talk to me anymore. He wanted to come to my house. He'd have gone to somebody else's house, and I would have destroyed a later chance of being helpful. There's nothing like friendliness, tolerance, kindness, and courtesy in helping out another alcoholic and bringing it into our personal affairs. I have fallen short of the mark sometimes. I'm a human being.
Thank you guys so much. Awesome. We've got about 5 minutes left for the sharing portion. So if you guys could just take a minute or two each to wrap up, I will read the final paragraph, which is on page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Miss Ebony?
This is a revolutionary idea right here. Simple, but not easy. Ignore entirely the other person. This inventory is mine. Where was I to blame? Those are brand new ideas for me. And this is the part, like this is the power part of the fourth step for me, is to admit where I was wrong and become ready and willing to make it right. You know, my sponsor was very clear, Ebony, just because you wrote it down and just because you did a fifth step, do not throw this inventory away. Like this is laying the groundwork for what I'm about to do later on, for the work that's to come. You know, I can't read this paragraph without thinking clear-cut directions. All I have to do is show up and do the work resolutely. I hate that word, but I love it too. I love to say it to other people and not myself. but here we go, resolutely. I just follow the directions. I'm responsible for the actions and God's responsible for the results. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Yes, like Ebony said, this is a very challenging statement here. This isn't, this is a challenging statement here. I know we read and go, hey, this is what it looks like. You know, this gets rid of my part and their part. Putting out the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking? Though a situation not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person entirely. Now think about what that word is. Entirely, that gets rid of them having a part in it, because I'll justify that part. So I'm going to own up in this and look at myself and say, okay, these are my mistakes. Where did I go wrong? And I'm going to leave it at that. And then I'm going to set myself up to make amends through the process of steps 4 through 9. The third step decision isn't just the fourth step, it's 4 through 9. That's the powerhouse of the recovery. That's why Wilson put it in the 10th step, the 11th step, and the 12th step. We get to give it away to another alcoholic. It's a powerful combination to start to defeat self that's very strong and gets irritated in the process of being defeated. Okay? It doesn't give up easy. I don't know about you, but it does not give up easy. Okay? We're in this for the long run. And sometimes the best we can do sometimes in our life is not take a drink of alcohol, tie our shoes, and get to a meeting. And after the meeting, call our sponsor and ask God for help. And remember, I can only do the possible, and God does the impossible.
Thank you guys so much for giving so much of yourselves. That was very powerful stuff. Thank you so much. And I'm going to give everybody the chance to thank Ebony and Al after the Lord's Prayer. We'll unmute you. So we hope you'll stick around for that. And David just shared our PayPal link. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. And at this time, are there any AA-related announcements anybody has? You can wave at the screen or raise your hand virtually. I am not seeing any. Alrighty, we're going to move on. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have a question or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available here after we close the meeting. Strongly encourage you to stick around and hang out in the Zoom room and get to know some people. And if you're shy, feel free to email us at info@simpleactions.net. In closing, thank you guys so much again for your shares, and thanks to all who participated. And once more, I'll unmute everybody, or David will, after the Lord's Prayer and give you guys an opportunity to thank the speakers in person. And I have asked Jessica B. to read page 164, A Vision for You. And I will put that on the screen for you.
All right, I'm Jessica, I'm an alcoholic, and this is A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jessica. And we will now close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
Woohoo! Thanks, Ebony. Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Ebony. Thank you, Al. Great meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ebony.
Thanks, everyone.
2 hours notice for those speakers. They said yes.
Thank you so much for your message.